everybody. Welcome back to Bite Marks. Do you guys remember Hello. When this used to be a channel about podcasts and not video essays?
When we used to talk about video games instead of just tabletop ones.
Well, you know, a part of me has always felt that like making a podcast, well, we started making podcasts because we thought it would be easier than making video essays. But as it has happened this year, it just turned out that making video essays was easier than scheduling podcasts. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing.
It just sort of ended up that way because making podcasts is definitely easier because we record and edit and post it. And video essays, we have to do a lot more other stuff. It's just like, scheduling-wise, like you said, it's tough to schedule with someone who has a full-time job when I have nothing but time.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like trying to organize a D&D campaign with your friends, right? Like, at first, you guys are very enthusiastic, but then as time goes on, it becomes easier to skip sessions, and then people start getting tired. And if that's not a great segue for heart. The topic of the video, I don't know what is. So yeah, today, if you didn't tell by the title, we're going to be talking about fatigue in video games. This is more of a general overview. Callum and I often have these conversations that we decide to actually make into podcast episodes, and this is one of them, about the ways in which people can feel tired with video games and what that means for the gameplay experience. And the reason for this is because video games are the only interactive art medium. And as a result, you have to continuously engage with them in order to actually get the gameplay experience. So you can get tired of reading a book and you can put it down, but that's a different kind of tiredness, at least, or it's an approximate kind of tiredness to the different kinds of tiredness with video games, because it's a much more of a full body experience. And
yeah, because video games engage you in so many different ways. Like, a movie will engage you visually, audibly, and critically, but a video game also engages you physically.
Yeah, like your reflexes. If you, for example, platformers are a great case of this, because we've all played platformers that have left our hands hurt at the end, just because we're mashing the X button, you know, trying to make all the many jumps that we need in order to get through the level. You said that you've had hand cramps before from fighting games.
Well, I've my hands have been disfigured into horrific hook shapes from playing fighting games.
Yeah, you've worked your hands down into nubs.
Yeah, because you have to do that thing where you can't hold a controller normally when you're playing a fighting game, because I have small thumbs, so I can't hit all of the buttons. So I have to put my controller on my lap and like hold my hands over the buttons and press them. Like I'm a claw machine that's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah. Oh, that's a terrifying image. Callum has been turned into a flesh claw machine, but its only purpose is
I'm a
fighting
hunched, game. Hunched over my desk like the evil mom in Coraline. Just skinny fingers clicking the buttons.
We gotta get back on topic before this turns into like a creepypasta episode.
It took 3 minutes for us to go on a tangent.
Well, that's why people like this show, I think, and this is one of the values that our podcast structure has. Because you know, whenever I'm making a video essay, I'm always trying to like trim content out because I feel like otherwise I would just talk forever. But here, you know, we can talk forever. Yeah. But I would like us to get back on topic.
Yes. But just before we do, the recent Zelda video that I released was like 10 minutes long, and that felt so terrible, which is wild because I've literally watched 2-hour videos on this website before. It's when you make something that's supposed to be about something specific, going over like 8 minutes feels like a failure. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't proven my point well enough yet.
No, I hear you. I always get like, I always feel like the script will end up being longer than it actually is, you know, because I'm like, oh yeah, this script is like, you know, like many paragraphs, like many pages. And then I try and see how long it takes me to record it. And it's not even, you know, not even 10 minutes. But yeah,
I live in different worlds.
I think I talk faster than you do. Or maybe I just underestimate how
I talk way faster than you do. Are you kidding me? Anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, I I did do some reading for this. I've looked at a couple of books on game design. Funnily enough, some of those books were also on tabletop game design. Because I do think that tabletop games also occupy a similar problem with fatigue. And I would like to talk about that if we, you know, have time. So, Callum, I've got a couple of different examples of fatigue that I think are specific types. And I'm not sure if you also feel like, you know, you needed to make a taxonomy.
I guess so. I think there's just sort of like different types that I have self-identified from my experiences playing games.
Yeah, so why don't you start us off then?
Well, there's the type of fatigue that I guess I have to give them names now.
Yeah, you do.
That I have to... I would call this one the, oh no, it's 4 a.m. fatigue. Mm-hmm. Where you realize that you've been playing a game for many, many hours longer than you thought you were. And that would be something like Crusader Kings that just sort of sucks you in. And as soon as you realize that you've been playing this for so many hours, you suddenly all of the tiredness hits you at once. And you can't bear to look at this game anymore.
Interesting. So actually,
it's a weird instant, yeah.
No, so in some ways, this is actually a measure of the game's success, right? Because we want games to be immersive. Yeah. The goal of game playing is to lose yourself in the experience. And if you lose yourself in the experience, well, that's supposed to be good. But there's usually a moment when you play like Crusader Kings when suddenly you just feel like you get taken out of it. And then you look at the clock and then you realize that you've been playing this for too long.
However, the problem with the oh no, it's suddenly 4 a.m. fatigue type game is that it's always in short bursts. It's never continuously that way. You never play Crusader Kings for several months. You only ever play it for like a few weeks and then you don't touch it again for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing. It's like Skyrim, you know? How often do you re-download Skyrim so that you can lose hours and hours and hours playing it, and then you just suddenly never want to touch it again for a while? It's weirdly... Sorry?
No, I was going to say, it's kind of like when you eat food. Even your favorite meal, you'll get tired of eating it if you just have it over and over again.
Or like when you listen to a song, like a new song, and you rarely fall in love with it, but then you listen too much and you're sick of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or... when somebody uses their favorite song as their wake-up alarm.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I've never done that in my life before. It sounds like the worst thing in the world. There's no easier way for me to hate a song than it forcing me to wake up.
Yeah.
But that's the problem, is that these games are so immersive for short periods of time, and then you are just dead tired of them.
Is it more of to drill down just a little bit, what would you say you're actually getting tired of in that moment?
I suppose
Is it a pure physical reaction, like, oh god, I've played this Crusader King game for 10 hours, my eyes are burning? Or is it just that, like, the mental experience of
mental.
It?
Mental.
You think it's mental?
I think it's mental, because you... It's never a case of like, oh, you know, I can't bear to stare at my screen any longer. That's not really a problem for most people. It's more a case of like, I keep playing this game, and it's not really... I'm not getting like a new experience out of it every now and again. Like, it was fun, but now I'm tired of it. It's purely mental. It's just like... You keep going through the same motions, and they get less and less interesting as you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is a good point. I think that actually ties very closely to a type of fatigue that I've felt actually quite a lot, and I'm going to call this like loop fatigue or maybe cycle fatigue, right? So as I'm very fond of saying, the core component of any video game is the gameplay loop, right? It's just, you know, for those of you who don't know. A gameplay loop is a set of basically repeated steps where you do A, then you do B, then you go back to A. And that is basically the basis of all video games. Like, take, for example, Super Mario. the core gameplay loop of Super Mario is go right and jump. And it seems very simple. Like, how could that possibly be? But if you think about it, that's actually what you do in Mario. You just go right, and then at some points you jump. That's not just, maybe a very basic game can be that. But most games are actually a combination of interlocking, overlapping, and sometimes nested gameplay loops where, yes, in Mario, it's go right and then jump. But then also, you might have to decide, when to, try to use particular kinds of jumps, like, for example, the long jump or, short jumps and things like that, power-ups and so on and so forth. Sometimes the loops are very simple and sometimes they're very complicated. I think games that have very complicated loops, we often tend to think of those as like, those can be things like fighting games. The core loop of a fighting game is hit the guy and sort of like...
Hitman man goes down.
Yeah, Hitman man goes down. Yeah, but once you get past that, then it's like, okay, well, now you have combos, then you have things about like movement mechanics, spatial positioning.
In Tekken, there's if you hit up twice, you like go to the side of the person, you move in three-dimensional space around them.
Oh my god.
And you can use that to dodge hits. It is so difficult to wrap your head around.
Well, yeah,
because you fight, it's like 2.5D for the entire experience, and then suddenly three dimensions are added.
Yeah, this is a strong fighting games are too complicated podcast. That's our.
I love fighting games. Don't at me. I love fighting games, but they're stupid. Don't at Callum.
No, I hear you. So the thing about loop fatigue is that the more I think about it, there are like it's very insidious, right? So for example, one example of loop fatigue will be that if you have a very long loop, right, it actually might erode a player's willpower every time they have to complete the loop. An example that I think.
The best loops are always the simplest. That's why Mario is still so popular, because it has a very simple core gameplay loop.
Yeah, so for example, let's take Red Dead Redemption 2, I think it is, right? The looting loop for that game is not simple. The looting loop, every time you try to loot something, there's a very long animation that plays, in contrast to other games where you just pick up all the items and they instantly transfer to your inventory. Now, one problem that I've had when I've tried to play that game...
Wait. Is that part of the loop? Is the animation actually a part of the loop?
Well, you can't break out of...
Or is that a byproduct?
Okay. So, at some point... No, that's a good point. I think, to some extent, it's part of the design, right? They want you to experience that whole thing, because the whole game is about immersion, right? So the idea is that you must do all of these actions, even if you're not directly pushing buttons to do them. But it's like a conceptual gameplay loop in that sense, I think.
Maybe it becomes a part of the gameplay loop if it can't be skipped.
Yeah, because it is like, just like, imagine, for a second, like Mario, when he jumps, he has to go back down. There's no button to take him back down. There's gravity, obviously, but it's like a core part of the jump experience. Looting is a core part of the game. Like, I would describe the core gameplay loot of Red Dead Redemption as kill guy, take stuff, right?
Shoot and loot.
We have words for these things. I think Callum, actually, it's called a looter shooter. No, it's not. That's a separate game.
No. No.
Yeah,
you made me think about Borderlands.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my second example, actually, because... let me just complete it. But the whole process of taking something, looting somebody, is so long that actually I don't want to really do it very often, right? Every time I've tried to play Red Dead Redemption 2, I've gotten very quickly tired of having to do this loop animation, this loot animation, just so I can get something that I really don't really care about. Another great example of this, actually this is maybe a better example, is the core loop system of Borderlands, right? The core system of that is shoot guy, get stuff, get better gun, shoot guy.
Let's not lie here. The core system, the core loop of Borderlands is clean room, occasionally shoot man.
Yeah, I suppose
Borderlands is a game about systematically emptying lockers.
Yeah, no, that's
true. And occasionally you have to shoot a guy in a hockey mask.
Yeah. And that is a loop that is tiring, right? like, the more I do of that loop, because it's so, like, it's such an intrinsic part of the game's design, but it never really gets modified in any way. Like, there's a universal, like, if the numbers of the gun that you pick up are better, you know, the game is, you're not really going to deliberately handicap yourself by using weapons that are suboptimal, right? Because the game will start increasing, you know, the power scaling on you. So you have to always be upgrading
your equipment. You always start those games going like, oh, I'm going to do elemental weapons only or whatever. And then you look at like a weapon and it's like, this one just does more damage. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. And
it gets to a point where efficiency goes far over form. It's always function. Function takes precedence.
Exactly. And I think the reason for that is because you get tired of it, right? You get tired of the loop and you look for ways to start shortening the loop, right? And the gameplay is explicitly telling you that the best way to shorten this loop is to get the higher numbers, right? And at that point, you're like, okay, even if, like, you know, hypothetically, like, I always, like, whenever I start Borderlands, I'm a fool, right? Whenever I've played a Borderlands game, I'm like, oh, I'll try and stick to a theme, you know, I'll only use weapons that are from this manufacturer, or, you know, I'll only, like, try and limit myself in these. I give it up very quickly into the playthrough because I get tired of the core experience. And I'm trying to, like, find a way to shorten the experience. And that just means picking up whatever gun does more damage than the gun that I have. And so I end up with a very, like, weird-looking loadout that is completely against any, like, role-playing or sort of story immersion, just because I'm trying to minimize this time that I spend doing this thing, which is, if you think about it, really wacky, because that's the core idea of the game. And I find the core idea of the game tires me out really quickly.
So it kind of reminds me of that thing that, like, I don't know if it's a saying necessarily, but that idea of if you were given all of the Lego pieces in the world, what would you build? Like, having too much choice is kind of suffocating in that way. And Borderlands does weirdly have a large degree of choice, because all of the weapons are, like, a bit different. They do a different kind of damage. They, do like an extra thing, the one weapons, they explode when you reload them, that kind of stuff. But gaming as a whole has been moving towards this ideal of giving you as much choice as possible ever since nonlinear games became the big thing. And it really does feel kind of suffocating sometimes, and it can absolutely fatigue you, because you will sit there and you'll think, like, I don't want to make any choice now. I would rather do nothing than do any one of these, like, 15 things you've put in front of me.
Yeah, that's actually one reason why I don't really like a lot of Ubisoft games, because just comprehending the scale of the game, I think it tires me out for sure, you know. And I think, oh, I have to, like, play a Ubisoft game, and then I look at the map and I think, like, I have to do all of this stuff. Now, I don't have to do that, right? But the game kind of nudges you into doing all of the things. Like, let me give you a terrible example. Well, my brother and I, we played a game called Ghost Recon Breakpoint. Wildlands, which is the first one. And it was a new version. It was an open world Ghost Recon game set in Bolivia, in South America. And, you know,
that's an interesting setting.
Yeah, you know, it's...
You don't see many modern games set in Bolivia, do you?
No, not at all, right? Like, the game is actually banned in Bolivia because of its offensive presentation of Bolivian culture. Which is funny, because
imagine making a game that's so bad it's banned in the country it's set in?
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of the game is that you are basically destroying a drug cartel that is somehow, like, a multi-billion-dollar drug cartel, and, like, it's captured the whole of Bolivia, and it's just causing all this havoc. And it's an open world game. It's got all, like, you have to go up a tower and unlock stuff, and, you know, all of that stuff. But
classic.
It took my brother and I, it's not a long game, but it took us a long time to actually get through it, because a lot of the stuff was repetitive. The scale of the map is just very daunting, because there's just so much stuff that it just wants you to, like, pick up and, you know, go to this checkpoint and see that thing on the map and, you know, whatever. But the worst part of it was, after you finish the base game, it unlocks a new progression system, which is, I think it's called the Tier 1 progression system. And then you have to grind your way to, like, level 100 or something. And it just broke us. I don't know why we did it, right? I feel like we were lost in a fugue state. But my brother and I, we did it. We ground, ground, uh, ground, We grinded our way to level 100 or whatever of this system. And it was just the most unpleasant experience. At the end of it, you know, my brother and I were like trying to speed run the game almost to get to do the quest to get XP to get to the next level, right? Like it was completely soulless because it. What I feel with my heart of heart is that it shouldn't have been in the game. They shouldn't have added that additional feature because it just made the entire experience too tiring to even like really play. We just kept trying to short circuit the amount of time that we'd play the game so that we could level up. And you know what happened when you got to the end, Callum? You know what they gave us? A gun skin. What? That was it. We got to level 100 and all they gave us was this.
Was it gold? Did they give you a gold gun skin?
No, it was just like a camo gun, basically. At the end of it.
Oh, that's worse.
Yeah, and I just... and I it killed all of the enthusiasm that I had for the game. Because at least, you know, this is a Ubisoft game where there is like an actual finale, final mission kind of deal. But I was just exhausted. And I didn't want to play another game like that for months afterwards. And it took like a few, like a year or so before I played another one.
You know, I've been recently playing Assassin's Creed again, for some reason.
Which one?
Valhalla specifically. Not the latest one, the one before the latest one. The latest one is Mirage. What I was remembering from what you were saying is that the difference in like hunting for collectibles in Assassin's Creed 2 versus hunting for collectibles in Assassin's Creed Valhalla is incredible. Because in Assassin's Creed 2, it's a lot of work. You have to go and find all of these, like, I don't know, medallions or whatever, and then you unlock special armor, right?
Yeah.
But there's no, like, armor system. You don't get, like, an armor rating or whatever, rarely. It doesn't make that much of a difference, you know, if you upgrade your armor to the max, it's not gonna be an enormous leap from where you started. You're not gonna be able to take on, like, a whole army now. But the idea of getting, like, this special outfit for your character is so enticing. Because it must have some sort of benefit, right? It's like there's a mechanic where you can collect a bunch of feathers, and if you do, you unlock a cape, and it means you can't be notorious in that city.
Oh, wow.
Like, you never get a notoriety level.
Okay.
Valhalla, I don't care about any of the collectibles. Like, they have this, like, Odin sense thing, which is, it's exactly the same as Eagle Vision. It's exactly the same. Where you do that, and it'll show you a bunch of, like, you know, this is the in this direction there's treasure, in this direction there's a thing to talk to, in this direction there's a whatever. And if you go and use the Raven, it'll show you a bunch of these things and how far away they are. And I'll see something and it's like, oh, it's only 400 meters away. And it's like, oh, cool, I can go and pop over there. That's going to take like 5 minutes to get to. And I go and use the Raven to see where it is. And it's like, oh, it's 400 meters away on top of that mountain. It's 400 meters away up. And I just look at it and I'm like, you're joking, right? That's the problem. Because when you move from using like 4 or 5 Italian cities to the entire English countryside, everything becomes more, it takes more energy to get invested in. I don't want to like scrape through the entirety of 700 BCE England. No, it would be CE. 700 CE England to find like one scrap of a pauldron. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I will take the time to go run around the city for a bit to collect some things that could unlock something cool.
No, I hear you, right? So this is an example of not what I would argue is malicious design. Because one thing that we've noticed about the Ubisoft games, the Assassin's Creed games, is that as the games have gone on, they've increasingly added additional experience items and things like that. And the reason the game design is becoming this way is because they want it to fatigue you so that you get frustrated and buy items in the shop that allow you to progress, you know, like XP boosters or whatever, you know, so that you can get through the game faster. It's a deliberate design decision. You know, previously, in some of the examples that I might have given, We could argue that it wasn't necessarily malicious. That, you know, if a fighting game is too complicated, you know, maybe the developers are flying too close to the sun, or anything
well,
like that.
And also, like, a fighting game being too complicated isn't that much of a deal breaker because, like you said, the core gameplay loop is simple.
Yeah.
There are four buttons that each do a different kind of hit, and you can just slap your hand against them if you really want to, or you can do the complicated stuff.
Yeah. And obviously, you're not going to be playing a fighting game. At least each fighting game match is also deliberately kept on like a time limit. You're not going to play the same match for like several hours. You might play many, many matches over several hours. But in a Ubisoft game, you'll be spending the same experience in the same map, et cetera, for multiple times. And what they want you to do, right? I've noticed that a lot of games have becoming a lot more fatiguing. And the reason for that is we increasingly see like predatory monetization, right? What they want you to do is be tired so that you pay money to skip difficult segments or make the game easier for you, instead of just building a natural difficulty curve that is, less fatiguing to engage with. Because, I think this leads me to my second kind of type of fatigue that I've wanted to find, which is a progression fatigue, right? Like, we've all had that moment, and we've been describing that experience, where we're just tired of playing the game, and we feel like we can't make progress. We just become tired of repeating the same process over and over again and experiencing the same parts of the game again. I think this is like grinding, right? Like
MMOs are this is where MMOs live.
Yeah, this is the tension. It's just like the dialectic with MMOs.
I just thought about this. In World of Warcraft, whenever you start playing World of Warcraft, inevitably the first set of new armor you ever get from like a mission or whatever is always a stupid pair of shorts. I think I've played literally every class in World of Warcraft in like the free till level 20 deal just to try it out. You always get a stupid little pair of shorts. And I'm starting to think that that's like the insidious part. Like, if you play past the stupid little short section, you're so happy to get any other kind of equipment that you want to continue, because the equipment gets like a little bit cooler every time. So you start with dumb shorts, and then you get like okay slacks, and then decent jeans, and then cool parachute. It doesn't matter. Like, that's what I'm saying. They start you with like ugly, ridiculous-looking armor, so that the further you go on, the more almost grateful you are that you kept playing, so that you don't look ridiculous anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, World of Warcraft, and basically, I would argue, all MMOs fundamentally want to incentivize the sunk cost fallacy, right? They want you to play the game so much that you become afraid of not playing it because you've played it so much, right? Like, it's a very irrational bit of human behavior, but that's how MMOs have been working for, you know, forever, because, you know, at its heart, especially nowadays, it's basically impossible to monetize an MMO in the traditional way that it used to be, right? Paying for subscriptions, that's just not the way that the game industry is working. Instead, every little aspect
although
of
they still do it.
Yeah, no, they still do it. You can still have a subscription.
Don't get us wrong. It still happens.
No, for sure.
We're not saying it doesn't happen anymore. It's just, it's not what the newer ones are trying to do.
No, yeah, there will be a subscription, but they also will be, you know, a cash shop, paid items, XP boosters, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And what I find particularly insidious about this is that what the game is telling you is not that you're not good enough. Like let's contrast this with Dark Souls, right? A lot of people get tired of playing Dark Souls, and I'm there as well, right? However, there is a different kind of tiredness here, where if I fail in Dark Souls, it's not necessarily because I was underleveled. It's because, mechanically speaking, I didn't do what was asked of me at the time. I didn't dodge at the right moment. I didn't study the enemy tactics. If I keep fighting the boss, I actually get better at fighting the boss because, you know, all factors aside, I get more familiar with the patterns. You know, look at somebody's first attempt at a boss and look at their like last attempt.
Just real quick before we move on from this, I will say that we're talking from the experience of having played a Dark Souls game before. When we started playing Dark Souls, I often got tired of it because Dark Souls is very bad at explaining to you what it wants.
Mm-hmm.
It very rarely says, like, hey, upgrade your weapons. pick a weapon that you like and upgrade it. Don't just level up. Upgrade your weapons as well. And that often led to me like doing very little against bosses and getting really angry. So,
oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
Dark Souls doesn't explain itself very well, but yeah, I get what you're saying. It's
tutorialization is very different. You know, like the Dark Souls games have always had issues with tutorialization, and then you know people are always saying, "Oh, but that's part of the game. You're meant to like play the game with a wiki." And I would say, no, that's actually bad, right? The wiki is not meant to...
No, that's not a good thing. They didn't explain it properly.
No, yeah, they didn't explain it properly. Like, they don't need to stop the game and give you, like, 25 pages of text prompts that you have to click through. But they do need to explain things.
Maybe that's why Demon's Souls didn't do very well when it came out the first time. I mean, apparently it was huge in Japan, but, like, I never heard anyone talk about it before Dark Souls became big. And it's because using a wiki was less encouraged back then.
No, oh, yeah, and also, you know, the internet wasn't as prevalent. I didn't know that Demon's Souls existed until after I had finished Dark Souls 1.
But anyway, I get what you're saying. Like, if you lose against a boss in Dark Souls, and presumably you know enough about the game, like, you're in the game, and you have been for a while and doing all the stuff, you kind of have the understanding, like, I did something wrong.
Yeah. Whereas you know, if you
except for some of the bosses,
yeah, if you lose which are in just, an like,
Dark Souls yeah, like, is bullshit. Let's
yeah, for sure. If you lose in like Final Fantasy, right? Like I'm thinking like some of the old school JRPGs. It's not because you didn't like do the right stuff. Generally speaking, you lose because your numbers are just not high enough. The game is telling you, no, you haven't spent enough time doing you know our little things so that you can progress the game. It's not that you like get better at turn-based menu combat, like. Once you've done one fight in a turn-based menu combat game, you generally speaking, you know, have a grasp of the systems.
Yeah,
in some sense, you have to like have the right items.
There are other things to consider, like elemental types and so. Well, like Pokemon is basically a JRPG. Typing is something that like it's very easy to learn, but you'd be surprised how many people forget about it when you're on the spot and. It's maybe Pokemon is too easy of an example, but it's things like in Chrono Trigger, people have elements, some people have elemental weaknesses. I think every JRPG has this kind of system where it's like they have an elemental weakness and you kind of have to figure it out throughout the fight. So there are ways to get better at it, but I agree, I get what you're saying. It's not like a skill challenge.
No, it's a mental
challenge.
No, it's a meta challenge really, because like you're relying. The systems itself, like, they're not telling you, you know, hey, this damage type is weak against that damage type or whatever. You have to know what to do to choose the right outcome. But, like, the final fight of the game is mechanically identical to the first fight of the game. The only difference is the scale of the numbers, you know, the kinds of attacks that you can do. But, like, if you strip away everything, at the very first fight of the game is same to the very last. Whereas, if you look at Sekiro, the first fight of the game, the first boss, is completely different to the final boss. You know, in terms of what you actually need to be able to do mechanically to beat them, you know, and your level of skill.
I know. Is that true, though? The first boss of Dark Souls requires that you hit them until they die, and you dodge all of their hits, and
well,
you periodically heal yourself. And the final boss of Dark Souls, you have to hit them until they die.
They die. Okay, no,
and
you've
dodge
got me
all
there.
Their hits and periodically heal yourself.
Okay, I think maybe it's like sort of no, you've got me there. I think it is a matter of scale where. Your focus, the focus required of you, your like timing and all of that stuff, that's higher, I think. You know,
I think it's an involvement thing, like how involved you feel in the process. It's very easy to feel kind of removed from JRPGs, where you normally get immersed in a JRPG over the story. Like, I very rarely hear someone talk about Final Fantasy or whatever and go like, oh man, that gameplay slaps, I love menus. No, it's always, they say like, the story is really great. And that's the thing, that's what immerses you. But in something like Dark Souls, a lot of people would say like, I didn't get the story, or I didn't know it had one, or whatever, but the gameplay immerses them. You can't sell people an item in a store that will make the story better. Well, they haven't found a way to do that yet. Until they start selling you dialogue, which Ubisoft, if you're watching this, don't credit us for this one. But yeah, until they find a way to sell you dialogue or like extra chapters, if only they had a name for content you could download that had extra stuff in it, then the main things they're going to be selling you is stuff that improves the gameplay, whether that's making you do more damage or unlocking new things or whatever. So in games where gameplay takes sort of an immersive precedence over the story for the most part, that's where these kinds of microtransactions work the best.
I hear you. Actually, that is a great segue, because I actually wanted to ask about whether or not the story itself of the game could fatigue you. Right?
Yes. So
we've talked a lot about pacing on this channel. I think pacing is really hard to get right in a video game. It's actually one of the skills that I think defines like a good game developer versus a bad one. You know, like, can you actually make a game with good pacing? Go ahead. How do you think fatigue relates to like the actual story of the game? Can you get story fatigue, is what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can. Here's the thing. I love RPGs. This is every single RPG, especially Western ones. But Japanese RPGs do this a ton as well, where you will start with a very simple objective. Save the world, or kill the dragons, or go find your sister, or retrieve the sword, or something. And then, 3 hours later, you suddenly have 30 other things to do. Everything from petting the neighbor's dog to defending from the local orc incursion, or whatever. And the story gets pushed to the side. And that's the thing. It's the same thing as with choices. If there are too many stories to follow, it very, very much feels like the whole thing is a mess.
Yeah, you get really tired.
No one really thinks about a game like in terms of its main plot and its side plots. You think about a game's story as the whole experience. You know, that moment in Skyrim where you get married to a Hagraven because you get too drunk, that's part of the story of Skyrim to me, even though it's a side quest that's totally unrelated to basically anything else.
I'm fascinated by stories. I primarily play games that have stories. And I can tell you, I had a particular experience. I was playing a point-and-click adventure game. And I felt like as I started... And this was a cyberpunk point-and-click adventure game, so you know that I was like really into it. But I actually refunded the game. I very rarely do that, but I was so frustrated with the way that the story was told to me, because it would feel like the pacing was just so off, you know? Like, nothing was really connecting to anything. The game was really just trying to, like, do something super cerebral. And I actually said, no, I'm actually tired of this. The gameplay was very basic in the way that point-and-click adventure games are, but the story itself was just so badly paced that I thought to myself, I'm tired. I don't want to continue this. I don't have the energy to do it anymore. And I was in such a bad mood that I actually uninstalled the game and asked for a refund. And, you know, I wasn't really that far in. And the fact that the game lost me at that stage is not good, because those games are only story. They're basically the only reason you play that game is so that you can engage with the story. And I don't know what had happened there. I think that it's just really hard to make a story that can keep a player engaged without tiring them, because on both ends, you can have problems, right? So on the one end, if your story is just meandering and nothing feels like it comes to a point, well, people are going to get tired of that, right? But on the other hand, if you just constantly bombard the player with stuff, they will get overwhelmed and also get tired of that, because the brain will start, you know, thinking of it as noise and tuning it out. So it's really hard.
And fantasy and sci-fi are the worst at that, because they make up words for things.
Oh, yeah.
So they'll just throw new terms at you. So it's like the Draenor are attacking the Illistet in the province of Kaladu, and it's just like, what the hell are you talking? It really does end up getting filed under spam in your brain.
Exactly, because, you know, the thing is, to a person in that world, they have the necessary context of understanding. They know exactly, you know, what's going on. Those are not like disconnected factions. In the same way that, like, if we told somebody that two countries were fighting each other, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be the same, like, weird kind of moment. But the player character is not actually a person from that world. So if you're trying to tell a story and you're going to like really, you know, try to go for something immersive, you actually have to do a lot to make sure that by the time you start going into the, you know, all the wacky esoteric stuff, the player is already bought in.
Yeah. I remember there was a game I had to play for a review once where it was a pure platforming game where you used a... Well, no, it was a puzzle game where you used a grappling hook to solve a bunch of room puzzles, right?
Yeah.
It had an ending where you jump into a triangle and ascend, I guess, or disappear. And I was like, that doesn't... What's happening? And I went and checked the store page. It has a story. There is no spoken dialogue. There is no, like... floor messages or wall paintings or whatever to express this. The only bits of story is the fact that you are in a tower, you go and ascend on a triangle, and there's a description in the store page that tells you what's happening.
Oh my goodness. That's bad game design. You shouldn't have to, like, you know, we talked about how you shouldn't have to have a wiki to play Dark Souls. Like,
games shouldn't have homework.
No.
You shouldn't have to do homework to enjoy a game.
No, absolutely not, right? There are moments, there are like these kill switch moments when you're playing a video game when you realize, I'm playing a video game. Sometimes, like, if you repeatedly fail in a platformer, right, you break out of the rhythm of the platforming, where instead of flowing from one place to the other fluidly and experiencing the environment and all that stuff, instead, you're like, oh, I'm in a video game. Or, you know, when you're like fighting a boss and it just keeps kicking your butt, so you're like, okay, well, now I need to really try and like cheese the boss. You know, I have to like try and break the game, you know, to find any advantage that I can take against this guy. And, you know, that's just...
Or that merchant you were talking to's legs suddenly become his shoulders. I mean, sometimes it's just like... inevitable that you realize this is a video game. But to go back to fatigue for a moment, do you ever get fatigue when you're not playing a game?
What do you mean?
So, I don't know if you... There's been a small indie release recently that you may not have heard of. It was pretty under the radar. It was called Baldur's Gate 3. everyone has been talking about this game. And I don't mean just, like, talking about it as in discussing it or reviewing it or, like, your friends are talking about it. I mean, people are still making TikToks and Instagram posts and Instagram reels and YouTube videos and stuff about it. Sometimes it's just stuff in the game, like dialogue options that people haven't picked yet or whatever, or, like, silly moments or whatever. Sometimes it's people, like... doing dances dressed as the cat, but like there's so much content about Baldur's Gate 3 that isn't Baldur's Gate 3. It's just about it.
I see, right? So this I think we would call like fandom fatigue, because I actually have felt that way, and it was about Star Wars.
Or not even fandom fatigue, it's like external fatigue.
Yeah, because it's like there's so much Star Wars right now. I don't really watch anything. I haven't watched anything with Star Wars in a very long time, because there's so many things that I'd have to watch to get context, like, you know, to see like a little bit of Mandalorian, I need to watch like the Book of Boba Fett, and then to understand what's going, you know, it's I'm overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that I need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really it sucks, because it feels really good to have something you enjoy be popular. Like, yeah, awesome, it's getting the recognition it deserves. But I ended up uninstalling Baldur's Gate 3 after getting to the third act, which is like the final act of the game, before even attempting to finish it, because I just couldn't stand it anymore. Like, I had seen it everywhere. And it became a realization that it was taking energy for me to open the game. Not just because it's, like I said earlier, like filled with so many choices, the world is so big, there's so much to do, it's suffocating. But because I had, previously to opening this game, seen 5 or 6 or 15 or 20 Instagram posts or TikTok stories or YouTube videos that had Baldur's Gate in them, and suddenly it feels like I've been playing this game for hours already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you. I think it's you know, obviously this Baldur's Gate never set out to do all of that. They just became extremely popular, and I think social media magnified the problems that you're talking about, because, you know, once you start talking about, like, once Baldur's Gate became popular, or maybe before it was even popular, you know, once, you know, you're in like a social media zeitgeist, you have to talk about it because people are talking about it. Something like
this
used to
happen. It's kind of hilarious. One of the reasons Baldur's Gate became popular is because it doesn't have those things we were just talking about, DLC and microtransactions.
Yeah, it doesn't have a predatory game design. Here is the game, play it. You know, how much of the game you experience is entirely up to you and your ability to bypass the challenges, but you don't necessarily have to, you know, rely on any external shop or anything like that, you know, to bypass something. There's no option. And because they don't have these kinds of things, you notice that the gameplay design of Baldur's Gate is actually very different to other similar games, because they are specifically designing it for player experiences only, not for also frustrating you so that you buy something.
Although, let's just go back to loop fatigue for a second, because it is kind of inherently frustrating to have a luck-based combat and well, just a gaming system. Like, the great thing about dice is that it represents, like, the chaos of the world, so when you're playing an imaginative game like D&D, it works really well, because it's like, oh yeah, you could succeed, or you could not succeed, and obviously you have modifiers and things that, you know, fudge the results a bit. In a video game, though, it does get very frustrating when it's like, I have had to reload this section five times, because I keep rolling just below what I need, and it kills my whole party or whatever. In a D&D game, if we lose a fight, we could get captured or killed and have to start again, or divine intervention happens or whatever. Like, there's a human being who can come up with something on the fly that changes the game. In a video game, the parameters are set. If you lose this, you have to restart the section. So that, like, randomness in game design kind of does get more repetitive and fatiguing.
No, I hear you, right? Like, I think what's really interesting, especially about this, and I did want to talk about tabletop games, because I don't think tabletop games are immune to this problem, especially like some board games. Can you imagine, like, Monopoly, playing Monopoly is a fatiguing experience. I always feel tired after playing Monopoly.
I'm really good at Monopoly. I beat ass at Monopoly, so it's always fun for me.
But, you know, one of the real advantages of, like, having a DM that's a person is you can talk to that person and they can make whatever accommodations. Whenever I'm DMing a D&D game, I always make accommodations of what I think will be an interesting story. You know, like, if a player, you know, if something happens and I think, oh, yeah, I'll just change what I was going to do because I think that would make for a more interesting experience, especially for the players, I'll do that. I'm not going to make somebody sit here and, like, you know, fight a battle that they can't actually win, or, you know, be forced to, like, mechanically engage, because I find that the more you have to mechanically engage with D&D, the worse of the playing experience it actually is. It's at its best when you're occasionally rolling dice and then sort of telling a story with your friends.
I think it depends on the group, though, because my group really loves rolling dice. They want to fight everything. They want to get into skill checks and everything. Speaking of accommodating... I did the opposite once, where I made one of my players, who actually is Kevin, who's on our streams. Go and check out our streams Mondays and Thursdays. His character could basically use a spell that shouldn't let him teleport more than one person, but use it to teleport their whole group. And I made him roll, and if he got a bad roll, he would leave a leg behind. I didn't tell him that he would leave the leg behind, though. And that was kind of the dick move. You always have to tell your that's the one one of the few benefits few one of the benefits of video games have over like tabletop games. A video game is run by a computer, so it will always tell you the parameters, mainly, unless it's very poorly designed. But it will tell you, like, hey, if you jump here, you will take however much damage.
Well,
I forgot to tell Kevin that his leg would be left behind if he failed this roll. because I thought it would be fun, and I also thought it would be like an oh shit kind of moment, but it ended up being kind of a sour thing, because he's like, dude, I wouldn't have done that if I knew my leg would be left behind. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. And that's the thing, you don't really realize that you have to expose all the parameters.
Yeah, I mean, we did talk about it earlier, about how Dark Souls is just horribly tutorialized, so that many of the mechanics of the game, like, I guarantee you there are huge swathes of the player base that have never engaged with, like, the full spectrum of Dark Souls mechanics, because the game just doesn't tell you what these mechanics
are.
Yeah, so, you know, it is like a thing, but at the very least, you can have that conversation, you know? I have had times where I'm like, I thought that a player knew something about the, you know, the consequence of their action, and they did something, like, okay, well, we can go back and redo it, you know, we can just have, like, a rewind on that. Games sometimes will. The better games will always tell you what the outcome of an action will be. But obviously, you know, if a game is too heavily descriptive, then it stops being a game. And, you know, it's that, like, if the game is too descriptive about what it is, then you know it's a game and you don't get immersed in it, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird. So, other than the like, this game is boring kind of fatigue, is there other fatigues with tabletop role, or just tabletop games in general? Because I guess too many rules?
Yeah, for sure, too many
rules. Would be one, like, but that falls under the loop fatigue, doesn't it?
I think specifically with tabletop games, I think one type of fatigue that you get is a social fatigue, right? Just being around people, if you're not an extrovert, you know,
can really... That's not the game's fault.
No, it's not the game's fault, but, like, it's inherent to the design, isn't it?
Oh, you know what it is, though? It's like an evolved version of loop fatigue, where it's because you have to explain the loop to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you introduce the game to this group of people, you are suddenly the god king of this game. You invented it. You know everything there is about it. And you have to explain every little inch of it to everyone playing.
Yeah.
And it's fatigue and stress in the sense that, like, it is now on you if this game doesn't go well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If normally I'm the one who introduces my friends to, like, D&D and stuff, and I feel acutely aware if they're not having fun. Like, it really stresses me out.
It's the same kind of stress as, like, we're now talking about stress. Enjoy the new video. It's the same kind of stress as when you, like, show someone a YouTube video that you think is funny.
Oh, yeah. And they
you're
don't
watching laugh. Them watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But I think, speaking of fatigue, I think maybe we're getting a bit tired of this video. We're coming up in an hour. So I think we should probably start to wind down.
Thank you very much for listening and watching and listening, depending where you are. We are on Spotify and all of the podcast platforms, but we're also on YouTube, which is kind of our main hub. So if you really want to support the channel, give us a share, give us a like, give us a subscribe. If you prefer listening to this just on the platforms, the podcast platforms, then give us a review if the platform allows for it. It really helps us out.
Yeah, yeah, it does. You can check out our Patreon. We we've redid the tiers. Oh, no, we haven't.
We have a $1 tier and a $5 tier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can check us out on Patreon. You know, hang out during the live streams. They're always a lot of fun. And we have, you know, usually and some interesting game.
Just real quick, talking about our patron, thank you very much to our $5 a month patrons, Dorian, Liam Anderson, and Discordance. They really help out the show, keep it going, they make it so that we can, you know, spend time on this kind of stuff, and they get access to genuinely things that, the viewing populace of our digital city will never see.
Yes.
They'll never be aware of these videos.
They sit in a lofty skyrise with limited access videos that the plebeians of oh, but also
in the ivory tower made.
Yeah, I just forgot we have a YouTube memberships as well. If you don't want to support us on Patreon and you're more comfortable, you know, just doing stuff with YouTube, we have channel memberships. You're welcome to get them. You can get stuff for the streams as well if you support us that way.
And that's actually a huge help, because if a member of our channel watches our video, it gets a lot more engagement. So it would be a massive help to go on our membership. It has the same benefits as our Patreon, so you're not missing anything.
Yeah, and if you have a YouTube Premium, I think it is, You could tell that we haven't done this in a while because we're just like listing out all the things.
plug, call us an electronic shop. Thanks. Have a good time. I don't know when this is coming out, so I don't want to like wish anyone any sort of holiday specific.
Yeah, everybody just
wish them
be
all
cool.
The holidays.
Yeah, just all the holidays.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah.
Merry Valentine's.
Bye, everyone.
Be like St. Patrick and chase all of the snakes/Christians out of Ireland. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.